Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Good morning, Alain Ubeck. Welcome to Crossover.
Thank you very much, Jill Pasternak. We're very fortunate that we have this opportunity to talk with you and your audience.
Now, you are a fascinating gentleman. You've had quite a career, and you are a graduate of Temple, aren't you?
No, I'm actually not a graduate. When I was studying at Temple, I left to study in Paris, and after many years have gone by, I finished my college at Northern Illinois University.
But where are you from originally? Where were you born?
I was born in Philadelphia.
Born in Philadelphia, so you're a native son way, way back, is that right? Yes. And you are now living in Mexico for how many years?
It's about 36, 37
years. Oh, my
years.
Goodness. Okay, 36. Yes, you have an accent already. You know that. are you still with the National Symphony Orchestra in Mexico City? You're assistant first cello, is that right?
That's right.
And you also found this wonderful quartet, which was originally called the Russian-American and now is Carlos Chavez Quartet.
That is correct, right? Yes.
But what is fascinating, above and beyond the fact that you are doing music, not only of Mexico, but that you discovered music that has never really been recorded before, is that right?
This is true. In some cases, the quartet medium was not very popular for many years, and so there's a lot of music that was written for the ensemble, but never got a chance to have much more than one performance or no performance whatsoever. And some of the music was in the library. In fact, one of the pieces of one of our albums, a piece by Guadalupe Olmedo from 1889 or something like that, you know, was a photocopy of the manuscript and just in stuck in some other music. So it's just only leafing through the music that
that you found it.
Yes, there was.
Isn't that amazing?
It had never been played, and so we enjoyed it and we recorded it.
Now, I know we have a scarce selection here at the station of Mexican composers, or perhaps mostly more contemporary composers, composers of the 20th century, I would say. Now, you discovered a manuscript by Guadalupe Olmedo, 19th century.
I have to correct. It's not really the manuscript. It was a photocopy of the manuscript that somebody had made. The manuscript I saw, the original manuscript, I later looked it up, and it was at the Conservatory of Music, and I was able to make other photocopies of it and look at it, and it was the most amazing piece, because this, in conjunction with an overture for orchestra, were two pieces that she wrote as requirements to enter the conservatory as a student.
I see.
And we're talking about times in Mexico when Mexico was just beginning to hear in concerts Beethoven's Fifth.
And also she was a woman, so that's
another
thing.
She was a woman,
thing,
and
yes.
That was very... At the conservatory at that time, I understand that there was a special special place in the conservatory for women who were of a high social class and study music, but not to be a professional.
Yes, well, women were not professional, of course. I mean, one would never expect that, right? Because one is, as a woman, you have a place in the home, and that's where you belong. So, of course, ladies of distinguished families played instruments, but they were never really considered to be capable, I suppose, of or allowed to really compete in the professional world.
And the other interesting information about her is that supposedly she was married to Melesio Morales, who was probably Mexico's most famous composer from that time period, a man who wrote operas, and he was also the director of the conservatory, and it's possible that she was his student at some point.
I see. So you have incorporated her her works into your programming for your concerts, is that right?
This is right. This is we tried to find with her works, other works of similar emotional and musical content in the CD. It was a composer, Alfonso de Elías, who wrote a piece much later in the 20th century, but very much in a romantic style, and the two seem to
complement one another, huh?
Yes.
Yes. Now, you have with you, of course, a performer, Lourdes Ambrís. She is doing music of another composer who you have with you today, and that's really
Jesus
one.
Echevarria.
Jesus, yes, Echevarria. Welcome, both of you, to Crossover as well. Well, I guess we'll start with Mr. Echevarria. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You were born in Mexico City, right?
Yes, I born in Mexico City.
And you are quite an accomplished composer. I have to tell you, your music is absolutely wonderful. Well, we listened to some of the discs that Alain sent, and it's really, they're beautiful, very beautiful.
Thank you very much.
What inspired you in terms of your subject matter for this?
I have some research in my life about the Mexican music, folkloric music, especially the Huasteca region.
And where is that?
It's the northeast of Mexico.
Yes.
And other regions as well, which the son music is the main form. It's a music from 18th century, maybe 17th century, and it's very popular in Mexico. One of the son music very famous is the mariachi.
Of course. Oh, they're marvelous, yeah.
There's one style of
playing.
Of mm-hmm. The general style. And the other route I took is counterpoint from the Baroque music. But if you look at the two musics arise from the same century, and we are talking about 17th century or 18th century.
Yes.
So the both mix well. And this is my vision about this works. It's the canasta de frutas.
Yes.
It's sweet Huasteca and sweet Tarasca. And this both are instrumental works. And cantes Huastecos, which is for soprano, tenor, and the string quartet.
And the string quartet, and the soprano on the recording is Lourdes Ambrís.
Yes.
welcome, Miss Ambrís.
Thank you. To
cross over. Was it difficult to sing these melodies?
Well, for me, as a classical soprano, the main issue here was to know the style and to try to imitate the way the people from the Huasteca sing. Normally, most of the singers are male. There are some women, but majority are men. And they sing with a falsetto, very very high notes.
Uh-huh.
And they make the difference very, very obvious between the normal voice and then when they produce the falsetto. In my case, being a woman, I couldn't do exactly that difference because as a classical opera singer, I am trained specifically to avoid this
kind
thing.
Of, yes. We are really not particularly acquainted with Mexican music on the classical side. The huapango, I see, is here. Can you explain what the huapango is? It's a style of dance or what?
Well, that Jesus is the right person to talk about.
Okay,
that.
So Maestro Echevarria, let's hear from you.
Well, the huapango is a term which has two sense, different sense. In one sense, huapango is the party, it's a fiesta. And in this party, people sing and dance over a stage of wood. A wood stage. And in other the sense of the word, the huapango is a music, especially music for the northeast of Mexico.
I see.
Huapango in the other sense of the word is okay, because it's fiesta, whatever took place in Guerrero, in other states, no? It's Huapango, always the fiesta with sing and dance.
So now we have quite an array of music here performed by the quartet. And Alain, may I speak with you once again?
Yes.
You are performing at the Kennedy Center, is that right?
We have three concerts here in Washington, D.C. This is all sponsored by the Mexican Embassy and the Mexican Cultural Institute, which is a faction of the same embassy. They try to promote activities that spotlight Mexican culture here in the United States. And two of the concerts at the Cultural Institute are given for various societies, Mexican-American societies in one occasion, that are looking to promote their ideals and the culture of Mexico in this country. And they have an archive of all their concerts. They broadcast this concert live on the internet at kennedycenter.com, Millennium Stage. And we're hoping that there'll be a lot of our countrymen, people from Mexico, who hear about this and come. And usually this is what happens, and we're able to, as Jesus mentioned, have a huapango or a big party with music and some dance. Lourdes is very, very visual, a beautiful woman, and she always dresses in a phenomenal huipil, and she's she very brightens the stage, and with the music, it's a very festive occasion.
You know what I was thinking about all of this? I suppose this probably is one of the goals of what you do, is to not only place Mexican music in a separate category, but to incorporate it into the repertoire of general music. You don't, when you play Mozart or you play, Puccini or you do Beethoven. That is our regular repertoire. And when we start, separating music according to nationality, it becomes an oddity. And I guess that part of what you are doing, and it might result in incorporating Mexican music into the general repertoire of music for the entire world.
That is a very good point. And that is a definite goal. The idea that music in Mexico doesn't necessarily follow the guidelines of classical music, in a sense that maybe European composers
yes.
followed. And so, but it's of the same quality, and it expresses the same types of nationalism, perhaps in some cases. And what is important that it does become part of the repertoire, because it is a music that is universal.
Yes.
This music of Jesus, for instance, we have played in Poland and other places where one would think that it's so culturally diverse, and it's just as well accepted. It's universal as is Mozart.
Yes. Well, I think that that's really what should happen, because, of course, all of the composers through the centuries, I guess, when nationalism became an important element, tried to incorporate folk music and so on in their music that they're doing. And I think that we have to kind of, it's really a goal to get the Mexican music into this universal repertoire that we're talking about. Even with, Mexico has made a tremendous mark in the musical world. I mean, even in the operatic field and then in the symphonic field. So I think what you're doing is bringing it down to a level that is very understandable and specific, and hopefully we can learn to appreciate what is there, and perhaps you can find some more music that you can bring to the world. Now, there is one album, let's see, which is the one that has contemporary? That's Chavez and the, is it the Contreras?
Right.
Yes.
Julio Contreras.
Yes. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Obviously, Carlos Chavez was probably the most important figure of Mexican music. In fact, one of the reasons perhaps why we changed our name, if you talk about Mexico and the music, Carlos Chavez immediately pops into most everyone's mind.
Of course.
He was important for Mexico for many reasons, not just his music, but as an organizer and a politician,
a patriot,
for culture,
yes. Yes.
For Mexican culture. You know, the founder of an orchestra and of all the institute, the National Fine Arts Institute, which we are all work in, and this music, you know, is has national elements, but it's a sort of a search for a new language.
Mm-hmm.
Using Mexican elements in combination with modern music techniques from that are pretty much generally used in Europe and in the United States.
What do you consider Mexican elements?
Well, like what Jesus has done, you know, to study the Mexican themes, Mexican rhythms, more than anything else, the 5/5/8 or things that are in 5/3+2,
the rhythm, the meter, and so on.
The meter,
yes.
Exactly. And these types of things are incorporated in a sometimes a tonal way. You know, Mexico was very, very forward. There was Julian Carrillo was a composer who was a microtonal and invented his own pianos and with a certain kind of tuning for his own instruments. There was I can't remember his name, an American who also expatriate lived many years in Mexico, lived and died, and he would write for a piano that was mechanized.
Oh, yes, yes, of
course. Mechanical
piano, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the music was very, very fast, wasn't it?
Nancaro,
yeah, Nancaro.
Okay.
And so...
Yes.
Here we have Mexico coming into the modern age in that they're more aware. Carlos Chavez had an incredibly intimate relation with Aaron Copland. These were times when Copland and all these people would correspond. Copland's Third Symphony was probably started in Tepoztlán, in the small towns at the south of Mexico City. He went there very frequently. There was all this incredible exchange of cultural ideas, and so Mexico began to grow in music. And using all these elements and from all these influences.
Well, of course, El Salón México of Copland is very definitive in terms of style.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who is Candelario Huizar?
Candelario Huizar.
Huizar, okay.
A very interesting man. I personally don't know a lot about him, but he was also a nationalist composer, primarily. His compositions, though, tended to be... without a real sense of form. For instance, the piece that we wrote, there isn't a lot of literature of his for strings. He wrote a lot of things for orchestra, but it was very interesting in the fact that it sort of just like went on and accumulated sounds and rhythms as it went on, and there was no real form. It was just like a piece written in one movement. And
very rubato,
yes.
I guess.
Yes. Rubato was trying to write it in. I think he was, as a nationalist, also a romantic, but I think maybe the times, you know, it wasn't accepted, or I'm not really quite sure what his...
Well, I can only say this, that I'm sure that for you personally and all of you who are working in the field, this is quite a journey to discover music and to compare it with new music and then to incorporate all of the folklore and everything that defines a nation and its people in their art. So again, we really appreciate your work and look forward, perhaps when you are coming through again, maybe to stop off in Philadelphia and visit us.
Well, we'd be delighted.